Take a few moments, Jeff. Animal spirits, what's your take on that entire phenomenon?
Yeah, it's interesting that some people, you know, certainly seem to encounter something that's more than just, you know, a human spirit. You know, I remember early on someone telling me about their own experience where they're sitting on a bed and they had a beloved cat that had passed on, and they felt something pounce on the bed, and they saw little footfalls, right, pushing into the comforter, just step, 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 and then it disappeared. And you sit there and you say, well, you know, I was raised Roman Catholic, and so the whole notion of the soul is strictly a human trait, is what that belief system teaches. I don't know how much I agree with that anymore. I know this gets into a bit of a religious discussion, but all living things seem to have some sort of spirit to them. And if you think about our pets, they've got, you know, personality, they've got their own little quirks, the things we love about them, and they show us affection, we show them affection. Certainly there's a strong bond there, and I could see why we would want them to hang around even after they pass on, and I could see why they may want to hang around even after they pass on. The evidence is there to suggest that some of these ghost encounters aren't human. Another woman who wrote to me told me that around Christmas time she always had to keep ornaments off of her Christmas tree near the bottom. Anyone who owns a cat would probably echo this same story, because the cat will bat at it and knock it to the ground and break these things. And so for years they had no ornaments on the lower foot and a half of their Christmas tree. And then the year their cat died, they said it was kind of a sad moment because they could put the ornaments down there this year. And then they were noticing that they'd sit there and watch some of these ornaments just be batted by some invisible force knocking the thing around. And, you know, you say, well, what would cause that? What's going on here? There's something to it. There is some life force that I think runs through all living things. And maybe it's something residual where it leaves an imprint on an area, not just a bad one, sometimes a positive one, like our little cat friends. Or maybe it's again that transition period where they're still half in our plane and half in another, and moving, you know, on the way to moving out. I'm not completely sure, but there's definitely something to it, because we hear these reports again and again. I know there was a cemetery in Connecticut, in Naugatuck, Connecticut, that I once looked into, that many reported a ghost of a horse that would be seen in the area. Specifically, you'd hear the clip-clop of the hoofs, but sometimes people would also see what looked like a stallion just kind of run through the cemetery and then vanish. And so there's, you know, the same evidence is there to suggest animal spirits as there are to suggest human spirits.
Do you think that the closer the animal might be to a human being, like your dog, like your cat, very close family pets, most of them live in the house, the more apt that spirit connection is supposed to be?
Well, I do believe that, you know, anything that we're connected to, you know, especially our loved ones, people, our pets, things like that, when you have that bond, it's just a reason for people to stay close. You know, God, I think about the pets I've had, and you're happiest, and they seem happiest when you're close. I mean, think about it. You know, if you've been gone all day, anyone who's ever had a dog knows, you know, you're gone all day, you come home. What a sight to come home to. This creature is just overjoyed that you're simply there, you know, that you just you're in their world again. And I think that those bonds don't go away just because one of you dies. You know, and it works the other way as well. Not just if the pet dies, but in some cases we hear about the human dies and the pet insists on hanging around, you know, his master's favorite chair or the bed, or seems to be following something invisible, you know, throughout the house. It's definitely a two-way street. That bond just doesn't seem to be broken, even in death.
Let me ask you about these historic haunts now, these spots all around the country. What are some of your favorite places?
Well, I do love the Queen Mary, definitely. That's just such a great story, you know, because this was a transatlantic ocean liner. It saw military service in World War II. It's, you know, the old golden age of transatlantic crossing before the airplane kind of, you know, trumped that. But That's certainly a favorite one, and so many legends all over that ship. On the East Coast, one place I come back to again and again is the White House, and I have a children's book coming out next year on the ghosts of the White House, a nonfiction children's book, which I'm
really
excited about. Yeah, it's in fact, we were just going through the copy edits this week, and it's a look at history through the eyes of the ghosts. And I called the White House. This was a few years ago that I started working on this, and I spoke to the boss at the time, who was a man named Gary Walters. He was the chief usher for every president since Nixon. He just retired this year. And I said, hey, you know, I'm interested in some of the ghostly legends, and I wasn't surprised. He said, you know, we really don't talk about that too much, and we know they're here. And I said, yeah, but you know what we're doing? I'm working on a children's book, and we're going to use ghosts as an innovative way to teach history. And he said, you know what? Okay, come on down. And I got to go interview Gary Walters inside the White House, get the tour of the building, talk with some of the Secret Service and some of the staff. And it was an incredible, incredible experience just to be there. And what blew me away even more than, you know, being a history buff and being in that building was how forthcoming everybody was in discussing the ghost there. A Secret Service agent I talked to who knew everything, every detail of the room, could tell you how old that carpet was, who painted that painting, what the bust, you know, the Clintons brought in this carpet in 1996 just to replace the old one. This chair was made in Connecticut. This, you know, that old stuffed cushion came from Europe, whatever. They knew everything. And so I'd ask, well, you know, what about the ghosts here? And without missing a beat, he said, yes, sir, we understand. Abraham Lincoln's up on the second floor near the Lincoln bedroom, and a British redcoat's been seen out near the North Portico. And I said, wow. You know, the same tone of voice that he described the chair, the cushion, the table, and the rug, he talked about the ghosts. And then the chief usher. Now, these are people, you have to understand, there's about 100 employees of the White House that work for that building, regardless of which political party is in power. It doesn't matter. These are the ushers, the butlers, the cleaning crew, the foremen, the electricians, the groundskeepers. These folks work for the building, and some of them have worked there for many years. Some of them, their fathers work there and their grandfathers work there. They have spent more time in that building than any president, because at most, any president can only live there for 8 years. You know, and they're not there all the time even during that, but these folks have been there for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, been there at all hours of the day and night working functions, and they've got ghost stories. They've got ghost stories to share about that building, and I think what I'm excited about is that it is a different way to teach history, because you can't understand the ghosts unless you put them in the context of who they were in history and what impact they had on the country. So that's certainly a place I come back to, you know, time and again.